Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski in for Joe today here on the program. Nick Kieser as well here with you on this Tuesday morning, talking NFL draft. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in friend of the show, Nick Baumgartner, who covers the NFL draft at The Athletic. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Nick, it looks pretty clear that the Titans are going to end up taking Cam Ward at number one overall. As you've watched him, as you've studied him, as you've spoken with people, what do you think the Titans are getting in Cam Ward if that's the way that it looks like they go here at number one?
Yeah, I like Cam Ward a lot. It's a tricky evaluation because he hasn't had, you know, a lot of experience against, you know, top-tier teams the way we would see normally with some of these quarterbacks where they, you know, they go through the SEC or the Big Ten or whatever it is and see, you know, really elite defenses. But Cam's story is super unique, right? So I think he's a worker. He's a guy who understands how to improve. He's improved every single year. He's been in college, and I think when you take his entire, you know, story into context, you know, this was a wing T quarterback that had no offers anywhere. Incarnate Word took him, and I don't think they thought he was going to be ready to do anything, and he set records there immediately, you know, showed everyone he could do some things that people didn't realize. And then every year since, it's been, you know, a consistent upward trajectory. So I think that in that sense, you know, when you talk to scouts, I think they all assume, or not assume, but, you know, they are very hopeful that that track of improvement every year will just continue. You know, he's not a true junior or something, but I think if you look at his entire football experience, he's still pretty, you know, young. And I think there's a lot to mold there. And I think that, you know, the ability to jump into a new situation this year at Miami, make plays immediately, be calm. As we know, you know, there's some hiccups here and there that he's got to clean up a lot, actually, you know, as a guy who just doesn't have a ton of experience. But I do think Cam has a natural feel for the game. I think he's a playmaker. I think he'll always maybe be a guy who runs the edge of, you know, maybe being a little bit too risky, but also at the same time, you know, it seems like guys like to rally around him too. So I like him. I like him a lot. I mean, it took a while for me and I think others too to get on board with that train. And I'm not sure I would have him as the, you know, the number one player on my board or even in the top 10 of that, but he's definitely in the top 15. And I think that if you're going to take a quarterback up there, it's absolutely Cam Ward.
Do you have any sense of his lower body mechanics and how, what kind of concerns there are there? That's something I've heard about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are significant. And I think that that's the biggest thing that we're looking at here. When you look at how he plays, you know, it's all very loose and, you know, kind of free and open, which, you know, allows him to make plays very quickly sometimes. But also, you know, he got away with a lot of stuff in college with his feet. You know, he's not a guy who, you know, takes your, you know, snaps the ball and immediately bangs into a three-step drop, comes up on the hitch and throws the ball. It's a lot of sort of at his own pace, his own feel with the receivers and timing. We saw that a lot. And that works, you know, to a degree in college, and it won't, you know, in the NFL. It's not a uncommon problem, but I think when we're talking about, you know, a guy like this who's, like we said earlier, like he's never really had to be in a huge fire of a game where it's like, man, you can't do this. You can't just freelance on every player, roll out of a sack or whatever it is, because you think you're more athletic to do it. So that's the big thing. But I think the thing that everybody goes back to is, because normally when you say, okay, the guy's got bad feet or he's not, you know, not on his footwork at all, especially if he's an older quarterback, you just kind of say, well, maybe that's just who he is and he's never going to get there. But with Cam, I think that that's, you know, probably not fair. I think that he has improved at something pretty significantly almost every year, whether it be, you know, mechanics with throwing the ball, reading defense, processing, all that sort of thing. And the last thing to come there, obviously, is going to be his feet, you know, getting in time and rhythm with the offense. So it's going to have to be a lot of coaching there. They're going to have to, a lot of patience, a lot of coaching, and really, you know, just kind of hammering down on, you know, the things you cannot get away with at this level. And I think everybody from Caleb Williams to Bryce Young and every other young quarterback that's come out would say similar, as they've all had to kind of go through similar things, maybe not as severe. I think Cam's is maybe a little bit more work there.
So, Nick, you know, obviously, if you're a Titans fan looking at this, you expect Cam Ward to go number one overall. And then the question becomes, what are you going to do at number 35 in the second round? And frankly, the Titans need just about everything on their roster. So there's a lot of need that they have. Right. I want to ask you specifically about receiver. When you get toward, you know, the latter part of the first round and into the early part of the second round in terms of your projections moving ahead here, what do you make of the receiver position, the quality of what the Titans and other teams could find there, and some guys maybe that stand out in that area that could be there?
Yeah, I think Tennessee's actually in a good spot there at the top of the second. You know, it's going to be an interesting year to see where these guys fall. It's not the deepest receiver class we've seen. You know, it's not like some of the ones we've seen in recent years. It's not bad, but it's kind of like in the middle. You know what I mean? But I do think that if you're at the top of the second round there, you know, after, you know, Tet McMillan, Egbuka, Matthew Golden, I think those guys are all pretty much, after Travis Hunter, of course, too, I think those guys are pretty much all locks to be first-round picks. But I think also, like, if you're at the top of the second, you could end up looking at Luther Burden, the kid from Mizzou, who did not have a great year last year. I think a lot of that was based on the quarterback and the offense just not really being great there at Missouri. But he is a difference maker with the ball in his hands. You know, a guy who it was huge yards after catch guy his entire career there in college. Jalen Noel, the kid from Iowa State, I love him, and his teammate Jaden Higgins. I think both of those guys are ready to go pretty much immediately. And that's, you know, and again, if you can get a guy like Golden to slip or Egbuka to slip. And the other thing, too, I would wonder about is if you want to trade up, you know, if you're Tennessee, if you think that if Emeka Egbuka is slipping down there into the 20s or, you know, late 20s even, and you're at 35 and you say, okay, well, you know, what does Cam Ward need to be successful? Number one, he needs to be protected. But number two, he needs, you know, a best friend type wide receiver who can just get open all the time. And I think that it would be smart to, you know, not take a look and see if Egbuka's fallen, go get him. I mean, he's the most quarterback-friendly receiver in this class. And the other guys I mentioned, too, would pretty much tick off the box for the same thing. Luther Burden, some people have him as a first-round talent. I think some people will have Jalen Noel right on the fringe in this draft, too. So they're in really good shape there to get, you know, a friendly target, we'll say, for a young quarterback who's going to need all the help he can get there.
You've done a deep dive in the recent past on Jordan Palmer and his work with Kyle McCord. Yeah. I'm wondering, out of your familiarity with Jordan Palmer, if you could give us a sense of what you think Will Levis is getting out of a couple months of work with Jordan Palmer.
Yeah, I wish Will Levis had started this 2 years ago or 3 years ago with Jordan. But I think the biggest thing that he does, and we just talked about it with Cam with the footwork stuff, right? The one thing that I learned from him is it's everything is about staying grounded, keeping your feet in the ground, and making sure that you're sort of attached to the ground before you throw. You can't just be off balance and just sort of wobbly and chuck it without your whole body. And I think a lot of the work that he does, you know, the first couple weeks when he gets a new person in there, they don't even touch a football. It's just, you know, footwork stuff. I mean, he worked for months on Kyle McCord's shotgun stance, you know, a matter of getting your feet so that your first step is one that is productive rather than something that you have to recover from. And I think that's a lot of what, you know, he teaches. A lot of the, you know, no throws anymore. I mean, very rarely are you making a throw completely on platform without anybody touching you. You've got to move around, obviously, and you've got to have the ability to do that. But you've got to also have the ability to make sure that, you know, your foot's loaded, you're in the ground, and you're making sure that, you know, your next move after that is something that, you know, is going to be productive to the rotation, you know, on the top of everything else. But I do think it's a ground-up thing with Jordan. I think that's always been the bag on Levis, even when he was at Kentucky. It was just elite arm talent, really good athlete, just wobbly everything else. The technique was just all over the place. And I think with Palmer, it really starts from the snap. I mean, he goes from every step that you're going to take and every possible, you know, drop. So that's one where I wish it started a couple of years ago, quite frankly. But I do think that that's a smart move on Levis's part to go seek him out.
Nick, as you look at running back here, like everybody's looking at the top with Jenty, obviously, and he's an unbelievable talent. How deep do you think this class is at running back? You know, we've been asked about Scataboo, you know, obviously Dylan Sampson out of Tennessee here. Like it feels to me that this is a very deep class at that spot. How do you view running back this year in the draft?
Yeah, it's outstanding. It might be the deepest class or the deepest group of any, you know, position group in the draft this year. I think last year there was 20 running backs taken, somewhere like that. I think this year I would not be surprised if it's 30 or more, which I think would be pretty close to the record, if not, you know, in the last 15 years anyway, it would be up there with matching any of those classes. I think that, and the other part of it too is, you know, there's a good 20 guys in here who can help a team tomorrow, you know, that in some way, shape, or form. Be it, you know, we talk about guys like Jeanty and Omarion Hampton and Caleb Johnson, Trayvon Henderson. These are guys that can come in and probably be your 1A or just your solo one, but there's guys in there. You mentioned Scadaboo, Damian Martinez, a kid from Miami, RJ Harvey from UCF there, Jordan James from Oregon. These are guys, Trevor Etienne's brother there at Georgia. These are all guys I think that can also come in right away, and you could get them maybe third, fourth round. I think there's going to be players even in the fifth round this year that, you know, you can draft and say, hey, we can put him in and he can do some things right now. It won't be just like a surprise or added bonus if this kid comes in here and helps us out. I think it's a really, really good year to need a running back. And almost even if you don't need one like right away, if you're thinking, you know, if you've got like an older guy that maybe is going to come off the roster here in a year or two, like this would be a good year to sort of go ahead and say, hey, these are playmakers. These are guys that can handle a load. A lot of them are super, super productive, you know, across the board. A lot of these guys, like DeCorey Kroski Merritt, was one of the best players at the Shrine Bowl from Arizona there, and he's probably a fifth-round pick in this draft. In a lot of other drafts, he'd be a second- or third-round guy. You know, I think that that's the situation here with running back. The one interesting thing, though, is, you know, you don't know where the run's going to start. So a lot of teams have talked about, you know, maybe we wait, but you don't want to wait too long, because if there's a run on these guys and they all start going, then, you know, we're going to be out of luck.
Can you compare and contrast, obviously, some great tight ends in this draft? Up at the top, you've got Warren and Loveland. What are the biggest differences and similarities between the two of them?
Yeah, they're both really fun players. I think Warren is the better physical, you know, athlete from a power presence. I mean, I think he has the highest potential of any of these guys from a blocking standpoint, like the potential to be a possible dominant blocker. When you look at him, I mean, he's just a fridge on wheels out there. He reminds me a lot of Dallas Clark, the old Iowa tight end that played there forever with the Colts and Peyton Manning. You know, a guy that is a true three-down weapon. Loveland, I think, is a better route runner. But Warren, anyway, I think is a true, you know, three-down weapon. You don't have to ever have to take him off the field. And I think in time he can become a guy who's, you know, a true asset in the run game, sort of a way maybe a George Kittle is or something like that. And then just kind of a safety net, you know, receiver. I don't think he's ever going to put up 98 catches like he did in college there for a team, but I think he's always going to be a pretty sturdy, you know, number one that, you know, it's going to be hard to find anybody that's doing more at that position than him. But and then Loveland, and then this is close. I mean, these guys are, it's 1A and 1B, and it goes back and forth a lot of times because Loveland is easily the best route runner in this tight end group, and he's up there with some of these wide receivers. I mean, this guy can run any route, from pretty much anywhere. He worked a lot in the slot. He worked outside at Michigan. He was also a very willing blocker. Not as good as Warren, I don't think, but he was still a guy that wasn't afraid to mix it up. He reminds me a lot of Sam Laporta here in Detroit, maybe a little bit taller version of Laporta. He's another guy who can get the ball out in space and then make plays after the catch. You know, he doesn't always fall down the minute he catches it type thing. So these are different dudes here. Mason Taylor, another one there from LSU, Jason Taylor's son. Just an outstanding athlete. There's five or six guys, again, in this class, maybe seven or eight, actually, who are really, really good players who can do a lot of things for a team.
Well, Nick, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time, as always. Thanks for being with us this morning. And we're just a few weeks away from the draft here. We'll have fun.
Oh, yeah.
Have fun. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Take care, fellas.
Absolutely. Nick Baumgartner, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll react to what Nick had to say. Take your thoughts on the NFL draft coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is from 12 Stones Crossing Golf Club in Goodlettsville. They offer 18 championship holes spanning over 6,800 yards with the meandering Madison Creek as its centerpiece. Get half off a $50 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Appreciate Nick Baumgartner for being with us in the last segment. Skyler on the text line, PK, saying, all this talent in other positions in this year's draft that the Titans badly need, especially tight end, and the Titans are about to reach on the 13th best player in the draft at number one overall. It's the Titan way, baby. We love it. Tighten up. This is from Skyler on the text line. Doesn't seem very excited about Cam Ward.
I don't know. What do you have them do to position for the tight end, who's probably the 13th best player in the draft also? I don't disagree. Cam Ward's probably 13th in the draft. But Warren and Loveland aren't first.
In the same neighborhood. Yeah. I don't know. Like, to me, that the trade back, that's when that starts to become more attractive is players like that. Like, look, I think Warren's going to be really good. I think Loveland's got a chance to be really good in the NFL too. But right now, I mean, the bottom line is you need a quarterback. Like, you're not going to take either one of those guys number one overall, right? Like,
no.
So – like, I understand the idea of this also gets back into with Ward specifically. Like, what is an acceptable outcome if you're a Titans fan for picking him at number one? Because I think some people think that if you pick him at number one, he's got to be Mahomes. And I don't buy into that. Like, I think there's –
he's not going to be Mahomes.
Yeah, he's not going to be Mahomes, first off. And number two, like, I don't buy into if you're picking somebody at number one that they've got to be Joe Burrow, Josh Allen level elite. Who, by the way, Josh Allen was not picked at number one. My point is, like, I've brought this example up a lot, and I know that what happened in Cleveland, and there's a lot of things that have gone on there that lead to this, and now what he's turned into in Tampa Bay. I do think he's a different, better player in Tampa Bay. But like, if they took Cam Ward and he turned out to be Baker Mayfield in the NFL at number one overall.
On a faster track.
Wouldn't you take that? Like, Baker Mayfield's not Mahomes. Baker Mayfield's not Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. But I'd take that. I would take what Baker Mayfield is now 10 times out of 10 with a number one overall pick. That's just me. Some Titans fans wouldn't, and I get it. Like, you want to have the superstar guy. I would take Baker Mayfield right now at the number one overall pick based on what he's turned out to be.
I would too. You wish it was better. but also a lot of these guys bust. And so it could be worse. I would take a steady Baker Mayfield. You know, there was Cleveland chaos there. But if you got the guy who's playing in Tampa Bay now, I think, and he's come up as the line in several conversations that I've had.
Yep.
And I think that's a reasonable line. And I think people that, you know, obviously you aspire to more.
Of course.
You want more. But he's a playoff caliber quarterback who does some really good things. And he's got the moxie and the leadership. And did it take a while? And did he have to move around a lot and all of that? Yeah. Part of that was, you know, there was some immaturity on his part at the beginning. And I don't know that you're going to deal with that element of it with Cam Ward at the beginning.
Part of that's where he was drafted, too.
Yeah, and part of that was the surroundings of a dysfunctional team. And the Titans are a dysfunctional team now. I don't know that they're dysfunctional in the same way that the Browns, or in all the same ways that the Browns were dysfunctional when Baker Mayfield arrived there. But they were unwise to give up on him when they did. Though, you know, you're facing that contract at a time when you're uncertain. You know, I can't remember all of the circumstances of that at the time. If the Titans can get Baker Mayfield out of this draft and he can be Baker Mayfield faster, I'm with you. I'd take that. And I'm not a big Cam Ward guy. I'm not. But I also think, like, you might be outsmarting yourself if you're trying to do something else. Now, I do think there's one factor here that messes everything up. That's Abdul Carter's foot.
Yeah.
Abdul Carter's foot messes a lot of things up. Now, can you justify taking Abdul Carter a healthy guy that doesn't have a potential long-term concern, an edge rusher. Can you justify taking that guy ahead of the best quarterback in the draft? I don't know if you can or you can't. But I don't think you can justify taking Abdul Carter with a potential thing that could turn into something, yep. especially when his agent, who's a blowhard, tells you at the combine that in what the combine's end of February,
yep. by the end of March,
tells
he's gonna be ready.
You March 28th, he's going to do everything at his pro day. And he does nothing at his pro day. Now maybe your medical people tell you it's not going to be anything, but still there's a little nugget of concern there.
I think
and if that
be.
Comes back to bite you, you're going to be kicking yourself as a franchise for a long time.
I got one texter that says, Robbie, if you take Baker Mayfield in Tampa as the number one overall pick right now, your bar is too low. I don't know. You tell me, guys. He threw for 4,500 yards and 41 touchdowns and completed 71% of his passes this year. Is that not good enough?
Yeah.
You tell me.
I mean, 41 touchdowns. 41 touchdowns. What do you want as a Titans fan?
I'm going to assume that this is probably just not somebody that's not really familiar with what he did this year in Tampa Bay. Again, Baker Mayfield's not perfect. He also threw 16 picks. So, he turns the ball over a little bit too much. But he throws the ball a ton. He completed 71% of his passes, threw for 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns. We've never seen a Titans quarterback do that ever.
Ryan Tannehill's best year, 2020, he threw 33 touchdowns. And in his worst year, interception-wise, in 2021, he threw 14 picks. So what did you just say for Mayfield?
He threw for 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns, 16 picks.
41 touchdowns, 16 picks. That's two more picks than Tannehill's worst year. It's 12 more touchdowns than Tannehill's best year. And Tannehill's best year was 3,800 yards. I mean, these are all benchmarks that are substantially – better than Tannehill's best, and Tannehill's been the most productive Titans quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think
so. You can draft a guy that's substantially better than the best guy that they've had, and you don't want him.
I'll tell you right now, if they draft Cam Ward, what are the chances that he ever has a season where he throws for 4,500 yards and 41 touchdowns? I'm not saying he can't do it or that he won't do it.
But the chances are low. If he did do it, you'd be thrilled that he did it.
Right.
And it would be Baker Mayfield.
Exactly. So, again, I'm not trying to sit here and act like Baker Mayfield is the be-all, end-all. But I'm just saying, I think there's a bit.
There's a huge difference
between, Patrick Mahomes and Peyton Manning and those guys being taken number one overall. Of course you want that. I would also take what Baker Mayfield has become as a number one overall pick and be just fine with that. If I'm the Tennessee Titans. Of course you want the best. You want more. I get that. But Baker Mayfield's turned into a pretty darn good player down there in Tampa Bay. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the NFL draft front. We'll do that coming up next. Plus, an epidemic in the world of sports that PK and I are determined to solve. We'll get into that coming up next as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. The Atlanta Braves country road trip coming to town and teaming up with the Nashville Predators in 102.5 The Game. Join us at the BetMGM Sports Lounge in Bridgestone Arena on Wednesday, April 16th for a Braves watch party as they take on the Tampa Bay Rays at noon. There'll be free giveaways like hats and t-shirts, plus you can win autographed baseballs, free Braves tickets to a game of your choice. Also, the first 15 people in the door will win a pair of tickets to that night's Preds game as well. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. PK, a lot of thoughts on the Baker Mayfield comp that we just threw out there. Got Skyler that says, I'd love Baker Mayfield and the Titans. Problem is we don't have Mike Evans or Chris Godwin. One texter says, I'm all for peak Baker Mayfield type of play, but do the decision makers have the patience to wait the 6 years in order to get there? That's why we say fast track. Like,
yeah, we're
to answer the question,
not
no,
as slow.
They do not have the patience, nor will they have
well,
the
no,
jobs.
No franchise has 6 years to wait on their quarterback to pan out. That's a second contract. The number one pick in the draft has to do something within 3 years.
Well, that's what also makes the Baker situation so interesting. It's because he did in Cleveland. Like, I think people forget, like, he made the playoffs and won a playoff game with the Browns.
In now, his third year.
And now, after that, you know, he tried to play through an injury that next year, and it wasn't good. Like, he threw 17 touchdowns, 13 picks, had a completion percentage of 60.5. Like, it went down on him. And then that was the end of it, and then we all know what happened in Cleveland after that, and they went and got Deshaun Watson, and here they sit.
But as a rookie, in 13 starts, he threw 27 touchdowns, 14 picks. Now, you don't like those picks. That's a, you know, pretty much a 2-for-1 ratio. But 27 touchdowns, 3,700 yards. I mean, there's something to work with there.
For sure.
Now, Tennessee traditionally is going to want much more conservative, structured, safe play there. Second year, 22 touchdowns, 21 interceptions. Not
it's a lot of turnovers
in the realm. Third year, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. You take that.
Yep.
And they went 11-5.
Yeah. I mean, look,
he threw for
like
3,500 yards.
You know, it wasn't perfect with him during his time in Cleveland, obviously, which is, you know, they thought eventually they could do better and end up with Deshaun Watson, and it's been an unmitigated disaster for them ever since then. Like, I understand that they thought they could do better at the time. I guarantee you, if you went back and had Cleveland do it all over again now, not only would they not do Deshaun Watson, but they'd probably keep Baker Mayfield. Like, they would probably sign up to keep Baker Mayfield around based on the way that he's played. So, again, I'm not trying to turn this into a Baker Mayfield love fest here. I'm just saying that I think the line and the range of what could end up being a pretty good pick as a number one overall quarterback doesn't always have to be like your elite of the elite Hall of Fame level quarterback. You can do a lot of winning in this league with pretty darn good quarterback play that Baker Mayfield's giving Tampa Bay right now. That's my point. So, like, you know, we talk about all the busts that are when you're taking a first-round quarterback, when you're taking a quarterback number one overall. There's a lot. There's a high bust rate there too. Well, I also think that if you could get one of these players where you solidify that spot and you've got a chance to play meaningful football games and win and get into the playoffs, you could do a whole lot worse than that if you're the Titans taking Cam Ward, and that's what he turns out to be at number one overall.
He's even better than I thought looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
And I've been a fan of the resurgence of Baker Mayfield. I would take somebody a notch lesser than what Mayfield did last year at number one. My bar is a little less than last year's Mayfield for the number one pick.
Well, and again, like, you know, Ward, there are some people that are making, I wouldn't say a big deal, because it's not like it's Hendon Hooker or anything, the age coming out of college. But Cam Ward, when he plays and takes a snap for the Titans next year, he'll be 23. He turns 23 coming up in May. So it's not your younger guy. It's kind of similar to Levis. Like, Levis was an older guy coming out of college. So there's not – part of the selling point when the Colts took Anthony Richardson as high as they did was, well, not only has he not played a lot of football, he's also really young. So there's more room for growth here. Like, Cam Ward, with the amount of football that he's played in college, like, you ought to get a pretty good idea. And Blake Bedingfield at paulkuharski.com touches on this a little bit. Like, he, you know, based on the amount of football that he's played, his age, things that he's seen with the playing time that he's gotten, like, you should have a pretty good baseline of exactly where he is when he comes into the league and try to project upside from there. Like, I don't think Cam Ward is like an impressive enough athlete where he's just going to blow you away with what he does athletically out there on the field. I think the big question with him is going to be, can he consistently deliver the football accurately over and over and over again? I have no doubt that Ward is going to make some incredible throws this year. He's going to make some throws where you just say, wow, look at that play from him. It's the routine plays. Can he make them over and over again? In some ways, he's kind of similar to Levis in that regard, PK, which I know scares the crap out of people when they hear it.
I also think it takes him 18-yard sacks. He thinks he can retreat and circle, and he got away with some of that on some plays in college. There's some McNair comparisons because he's got some escapability where he survives initial attack and recovers and makes a play. And he'll do that sometimes. But I think there are also some times where he thinks he can save a play where, coaches use the cliche that the journey, you got to know when the journey's over.
Yep.
And there may be a lesson for him to learn about when the journey's over in the NFL. And there may be some 18-yard sacks before he fully learns that lesson. And second and 28 or 38 is not a place to be.
Caleb says, I can't believe people say Baker isn't good enough for a Ward comp. There's an 80% chance any quarterback taken in the first round is a bust. And we're going to sit here as Titans fans and say Baker isn't good enough. This fan base isn't pathetic. I will say, just to be fair, I mean, most of the responses that we've gotten to this point would be like, yeah, I'd take Baker Mayfield. So there are some that have said that that's not a high enough bar. I do not believe that that is the majority that is taking place here. So.
Well, only 300 votes in, and I know not everybody on Twitter is listening to the show, which was a part of my point. I put, if the Titans draft Cam Ward and his best statistical season is 4,500 yards, 71.4 completion percentage, 41 TDs, and 16 picks, is that a success? Of 325 people, 93% say yes.
It's pretty overwhelming.
And I'm not saying that's Baker Mayfield in the question, but people are smart enough to say yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people would sign up for that all day long. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next, a problem in the world of sports that PK and I are going to attempt to solve. We'll get into that. We will have Mike Herndon from PaulKuharski.com joining us at 8:30. All that coming up. Robbie and Rexrow, 1025, 1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
I don't mind casual conversation at the gym. Like, I'm cool with talking to people. But like, we don't need to go through the entire history of your life and my life and what all is going on while I'm in the middle of a workout. Like, it's right. One thing if we're just sitting there, but, you know, I'm lifting weights and this guy's like, so what do you think about this? And I'm like, oh, you know, it's great. It's awesome.
When you put those things together, that just makes me realize, you know, I haven't made deviled eggs in a long time, and I love deviled eggs.
I think you should keep it off the menu.
Man, if you had my deviled eggs, you get that right amount of paprika in there, man, come on.
Yeah, you will really get farted up with that stuff, okay?
It is that time of the day, time of the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. PK with me here on the program. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, PK, there's a huge problem in the world of sports, and you made me aware of this piece last night at The Ringer by Kurt Goldsberry, going through this problem, and I think we have a lot of people that at least at one point in their life, maybe not now, maybe they are now, have been fans of the NBA, whether that was when you were a kid growing up, whether that was when, I don't know, you got attached to a player, whether it's Kobe Bryant or LeBron or whoever. I think we would all agree that right now there's a huge problem in the NBA as it relates to viewership. The numbers are going down. The ratings have been bad this year in the NBA. They tried a new format with the All-Star game that was completely terrible. And I think a big problem that people have with the game right now are, man, they sure shoot a lot of threes. There's a lot of threes out there or a dunk, and that's basically what an offensive possession is. It's either a three-point shot or a dunk. And we've said that for a while. And I guess I've never really put the numbers to it, but Kurt Goldsberry, in this piece at The Ringer, does put the numbers to it. And he brings up a specific game between the Celtics and the Thunder, where the Celtics took 63 three-point shots in a game. 63 of them. and they missed 43. So that means that throughout the course of the game, they made a total of 41 shots, which means they missed more three-pointers than they made shots in total throughout the entire game. Of the game's 176 total field goal attempts, 100 were threes, 76 were twos. And the question that Goldsberry throws out there is, are threes still lovely when they make up 57% of a game shot? So, PK, here's where I come down on this. Like, watching Steph Curry play basketball is a lot of fun. Like, his ability to pull up from basically anywhere is incredible. Not everybody's Steph Curry, and not everybody can do that. And the game basically has turned into a three-point contest, or you have to go get a dunk, and there's no in-between. Like, the mid-range game is essentially dead in the NBA. You know, I've long since given up hope of, like, the big man being a big factor. Like, Jokic is a huge factor in the NBA, but even he's a different type of big man than we used to see. He can pass, he can shoot the three, he can do all those things. So I think the NBA has got a huge problem in terms of the three-point shot. I don't know at this point when we're getting back to going the other way where there's more of a blend. I love the three-point shot. I love it in moderation. I think, like most things in life, PK, it needs to be in moderation, and they've gotten out of control with this in the NBA. It's hard to watch. It's hard to watch when teams are just going back up and down the floor and trading threes all the time.
My big takeaway from this piece and the heat map that he shows of where shots are taken is that the corner three is out of control. All right, and we know that's a straight line down the sideline for a while before it turns into an arc, because the court is not wide enough for the arc to be an arc out to the corner. So the corner three is the most valuable shot in the game. Is that how the game was designed? For people to stand out on the wings in the corners and to be gunning from there? That's disproportionate by a long shot. And so what he proposes really is a modernization of the three. It has not changed since it was put in there. It changed once, and they moved it in, and they put it back. What they need to do is put it further back, because it's too easy. The percentages make it the shot you want, because the value of a make is too good. Move the line back and kill the line when the arc ends, so that a corner jumper is a two-point shot. And so make it an arc and have the arc end, and then the corners are just two-point shots. I love that idea. I think it modernizes, and I think the NBA has not been amenable to – it used to be. The key became a lane, and things like that happened. But when's the last change of this magnitude that keeps up with it? Say what you will about baseball – but it's done, and baseball's the most stoic, non-changing sport.
Yep.
But it's done things to change the game for a better viewing product. And the NFL's always tinkering. I think basketball, and I agree with the author here, needs to change it to make mid-range more important and to decrease the three by moving it back and getting rid of corner threes.
It's an interesting proposal. Like, I've not seen anybody lay it out exactly this way in terms of basically eliminating the arc and the corner three that would be involved there. It is interesting. Like, you look at this heat map, and the heat map is titled Most Common Shots in the NBA During the 2024-25 Season. And there's a map basically all the way around the three-point line that really just gets hammered in on the corner of both sides, and then directly under the basket. Other than that, like, there's nothing at the elbow, there's nothing at the foul line, there's nothing anywhere near being a step or two inside the three-point line. And I get, like, I don't necessarily blame NBA teams, because they've run numbers on this. They've got analytics departments that tell them these are the two shots you need to try to get, either the three or directly underneath the basket. Like, that's where you need to go. So they're just doing what the numbers tell them they should do. I get that. Having said that, purely from a viewership standpoint, like, I think that's part of why you're seeing the numbers and the viewership numbers go down. And there's probably a lot to it, but that's part of it, is I think people are tired of just watching teams run up and down the court and just chuck threes up all the time. Again, it's fun to watch Steph Curry do his thing. Not everybody's Steph Curry out there. So they've got a real problem on their hands from a viewership standpoint, I think, that they got to find a way to get figured out here. And I don't know if you leave things alone, whether or not the game is going to actually – I know the game goes in cycles, right? Like LeBron's talked about this. Like basically, he was talking about this on his podcast with Steve Nash the other day. When he came in the league, every team had two bigs, and that was the way they operated their offense. And then it went down to one big when Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire were in Phoenix doing their thing. And essentially in today's game, it's turned into five out, he said. It's like you don't even worry about the bigs other than like Jokic, but even he's a different guy, and it's a five-out offense, and everybody can shoot threes and all those things. I get the game evolves, but I do think you have a problem when you're just walking back up and down the court and chucking up threes every possession.
Also, rebounding is a totally different thing than it was, quote-unquote, intended to be. Because the rebounds off the three obviously are not coming out near the basket, which reduces the importance of the bigs and allows littler people, quote-unquote, much further from the basket to be in the rebounding game. And a putback, you're not exactly putting the ball back when you're getting a rebound
six feet
from or 8 feet from the rim.
Yep, 615-737-1025, our phone number.
I tweeted out that story.
Yeah, at the Ringer. It's a really good article there that kind of lays things out of where they're at. We've got a lot of different thoughts on this. Some people on the text line are all on board with this, saying they hate watching what's basically turned into – a three-point contest. We do have some others that are like, it's not really what the issue is with the NBA. It's more about like the sitting out and the load management and not playing. I get that too. Like, I think there's a lot with the NBA that they've got to find a way to address. And I think Adam Silver and the NBA are finally starting to recognize that what they're doing right now is not going to work long-term. So I'm not saying that this is the biggest problem, but I do think this is playing a part in it of the games themselves, even though you may run across a game every now and then where, you know, it's 149 to 146 because people are connecting on threes that night. You know, when you have games that this article just laid out there that Goldsberry talks about where you just got more missed three-pointers than actual shots made in the game, that's a hard sell to watch and invest yourself in 48 minutes of that on a nightly basis if that's happening. Hard sell.
I'd flip the TV away if I was watching that, and certainly if you bought a ticket to that, that's
a tough one.
Tough one to walk home from.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take more of your thoughts on that. Plus, PK has more to watch on the Titans front and a potential trade out of pick number 35 overall. We brought some of that up with Baumgartner a little bit earlier in the show. If you missed that, you can check it out wherever you get your podcast. Robbie and Rex Road, Apple, Spotify. We'll have more coming with PK next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.